Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Before I start today's show, I want to take a moment to express my deepest condolences to my colleague, mentor, and friend Dave Glover, along with his family. The tragic loss of his son, David, earlier this week is so incredibly sad. I hope you will join me in sending your sincere compassion and empathy to all. Please keep them in your hearts and minds. Rest in peace, David. Thank you. Let's get started. As long as anyone can remember, Northumberland County has issued its annual audited financial statement. I know, could anything be more boring to anyone other than an accountant? But the fiscal report for 2019 was different. It was released recently, but not as a snooze of a document. Instead, it was a glossy, multicolored, highly designed report with all the kinds of slick graphics and wonderful narration describing a grocery list of the county's accomplishments over the past year. In the midst of the glitz and glamour and the boring numbers is some really vital information taxpayers need to know. So the first segment will be an interview with two top county officials looking behind all the razzle-dazzle to talk about the housing crisis, the impact of the pandemic, along with other urgent initiatives. And now, here is my interview with Jennifer Moore, CAO of Northumberland County, and the county's Director of Finance, Glenn Dees, about the 2019 annual report. I am so pleased to welcome to Consider This Jennifer Moore, CAO of Northumberland County and Director of Finance and Treasurer, Glenn Dees. Welcome to Consider This.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
If there's one takeaway from this annual report, what is it? Jennifer, do you want to start?
Okay. I think the annual report is, it's just a really great overview of all of the things that the county was doing in 2019. It gives us a perspective on the financials, but also just, it's just a really good document to summarize everything that the county has accomplished. It looks at all the departments. It looks at major projects. It looks at operating services and what we do. It's just a really great summary of understanding the county business.
Is there one item in the report, though, that sort of stands out to you that people should be aware of when we look at the report overall?
I don't think there's any one item. I think all of our departments are so unique that I would really say that it's a highlight for each department. It's looking at the progress on capital projects, like the rebuild of the new Golden Plow Lodge and the Northumberland County Archives and Museum. It's looking at a lot of roads projects and work that's progressed there. It's looking at the new base. We saw the grand opening for Roseneath and construction of Campbellford for the paramedics. We saw a number of activities in social services, particularly around social housing with the housing strategy. So each department really does have their own highlight, I think.
Glenn, I noticed in the past annual reports, they were simply audited financials for the county, something I know that it's required to do. And usually it's a very plain report. What was the reason the county created this expanded version of the report with all the graphics and the additional information, including details and summaries?
I think that's alluding back to Jennifer's comments. We're taking some very complex financial information and condensing it down into a more understandable, readable format for the general public. I mean, even as accountants looking at the financial statements, it can be a lot to absorb. And the county is a full service municipality as well as an upper tier municipality. We primarily have all of the services that most upper tier municipalities would have. A lot of complicated funding pockets that we receive from provincial ministries. So it's very complex, and annual reports have really evolved since, you know, what they used to be, which was primarily, here's your financial statements, you get a management discussion and analysis on the financials for the year. But this is really much more entrenched in financial due diligence, really entrenched with the county strategic plan as well. As you read through the document, everything is referring back to the county's four-year strategic plan and showing that alignment for the various goals. So it's much more than just financial information. An excellent tool to educate and provide that transparency to the public.
If there's something about the financial statement that we should have our attention drawn to, what would you like people to go and look at?
Well, I think more from the perspective of looking at the long-term needs of the county. So looking at our balance sheet and recognizing that over the past several years, we've been able to build some of our reserves. And in light of some of Jennifer's comments on these very large infrastructure projects that we have coming up in future years, where we're going to need to draw off of these reserves to reduce the amount of debentures that we would otherwise have to take on. So I think it's really indicative of our financial due diligence and that long-term planning that we have in place. We do provide for a 10-year long-term detailed plan for both operating and capital. So we're able to go out 10 years and look at what our reserves are going to be, what our debt is going to be. And that really gives us the picture that we want to present to council as well as the public on that forward looking and ensuring we have financial sustainability to meet all our strategic goals.
Certainly the pandemic has played a role in many aspects of county government, but in terms of finance, do you have any concerns in regards to revenues?
So far we've been somewhat fortunate. Initially as the pandemic commenced and there was some significant operating costs primarily around personal protective equipment for our Golden Plow Lodge, as well as our paramedics and now staff being reintegrated into the workforce. So we had some significant challenges on the expenditure side. Also on the revenue side, with the waiving of bag tags for a period of a couple of months, or one bag tag per week, certainly had an impact on our revenues. But over the past several months and most recently, there's been some announcements from provincial ministries that are providing additional funding to municipalities to assist with pandemic costs. So we do continue to monitor it very closely, but I suspect as we get closer to the end of the year, we should be trailing fairly closely to what we had anticipated from the perspective of our budget for the year.
Jennifer, this is the first year of the new strategic plan. With that in mind, what are the most significant changes that have taken place from 2018 to 2019?
The strategic plan really is a continuation of the previous strategic plan. There isn't any dramatic changes. It really is, I think, just an evolution. There isn't anything that I can point to that would be completely new or different. I think when we looked at most of our strategies, I think this council really is very much interested in generally continuing on the path that we were on. We continue to look at new opportunities, and I think we've seen some of those in just in recent weeks when we were able to get funding for the Elgin Street redevelopment for housing. But we saw in our previous strategic plan that we had placed a significant importance on housing strategy, and now we're seeing some of those things come to fruition. Same thing with the rebuild of our long-term care home. In the previous strategic plan, that was highlighted as a goal. We started the planning, and now in the strategic plan, we're into the actual construction. So really most of those priorities, things like shared services, collaboration with community partners, they were all highlighted in both strategic plans. So I think it really is just an evolution. Some things probably a little more of a response to what's happening around us. So we tend to maybe shuffle our priorities a little bit from one plan to the next. But by and large, it is pretty consistent from one term to the other term, which is really what we want. And like Glenn said, with long-term planning and looking out to that 10-year horizon all of the time, that really encompasses multiple strategic plans when we look at them over a four-year term. So it's important that we do that continual look and just tweak those plans rather than start from scratch and blow it up. It's that evolution that's important.
Both in the report and in your remarks, you've talked about the importance of affordable housing. And it was emphasized in the report that, you know, the Elgin East has been several years coming online. It's going to be doubling the capacity, I think, by 20 units. There's also the 473 Ontario Street, which you mentioned in the report, which again is very significant in terms of affordable housing. And yet we have a 10-year waiting list. There's approximately 1,000 people been identified as needing affordable housing. Is the county moving quickly enough to address this, despite your best efforts?
It is. It's always a challenge, for sure. We know there is definitely a need in the community, And I think that the county is only one aspect of addressing the housing challenges that our community faces. It's something that all of our member municipalities have partnered with the housing strategy in looking at tools that they can use to incentivize private sector developers to look at more affordable housing. We've seen some of our local developers have interest in things like secondary suites, and how do you build that into to new developments? How do we look at a broader spectrum? How do we attract builders to do more purpose-built rentals so that we can address the entire housing spectrum and looking at everything from the rental to the owner to the home ownership? The county really, when we look at the units that we're constructing, they are generally RGI units or serving those that are most in need or on our wait list. And we really need the entire community, be it member municipalities, the development, the developers and construction sector, they all play a role, and as well as other levels of government. And that's what we saw with Elgin Street in helping us launch that project, was the other levels of government coming to the table with some funding to help initiate that project. So it is always a challenge to make sure that we have all of those things in place. But as I said, we're really working in the space of the most affordable housing and looking at ways that we can help facilitate. And all of our partners across the community, I think, are also playing a role in and having the broader housing strategy is certainly helping to achieve that as we start to see things come together with all the tools being put in place.
Glenn, I can imagine there's some people that are thinking, well, why don't we just spend more money? You've got all those reserves. You put them in the report. It's the money is there. Why don't we focus on getting this affordable housing crisis addressed more quickly? Can you maybe comment on that?
Well, I think back to Jennifer's comments, it's not quite as simple as the county just spending money. And as I mentioned, we do have a long-term plan and we do have strategic objectives identified within the long-term model. And they include placeholders that we have over the 10 years for projects like Elgin and other anticipated projects that would likely come to fruition over the 10 years. And those are really indicative of the reserve. So we've identified those items and we've identified the sources of financing coming from those reserves. So the funds are situated, but you know, these projects are very costly and there are some reserves in place, but over the next several years, those reserves are gonna be depleted quite significantly. Look at the Goldman Plow Lodge redevelopment. We look at Elgin, part of that project will be funded by reserves, and a new bridge in Campbellford. These are all very, very costly projects which will draw on our reserves. So, you know, and our reserves look healthy now, but then, you know, over the longer term, we certainly start to draw on them and utilize them as a means towards financing these projects. And we do have placeholders within our long-term plan specifically for affordable housing, but we have to be aware of all the needs across the county. And as I mentioned, we are a full service municipality. So there's critical areas across all the county departments that we have to recognize. And also looking at various master plans that departments have in place, as an example, within our waste department, recognizing that we have one active landfill remaining, and what are we going to do once we finish our residual waste EA from the perspective of expanding landfill or looking at other options. So we have to look really at the broader spectrum. And again, that's where it's important to have that long-term plan so that those decisions don't happen in isolation of just the current budget year.
Jennifer, one of the things that is highlighted in the annual report are the partnerships that the county has with the various municipalities. Can you talk a bit about the significance of those partnerships and how the county is working with the lower tier municipalities to provide services?
The shared services that we offer, as you said, they're really important, and they have been a focus over the past number of years. Some of these go back a couple of decades, like the surface treatment for roads. That's been in place for many, many years. IT is a little more recent, and we've been taking on additional municipalities, you know, just over the last 6 or 8 months, we've brought Port Hope on board, for example. So I think really what we're seeing there, it's about cost efficiency for sure, but it's also about the level of service and what we're able to do with consistency, by having that, by building teams that where we have the capacity to serve so many different aspects of what's needed. And we can bring specialists on that can serve the county as well as all the municipalities when you have that larger mass of work to perform. So, you know, IT, as you mentioned, is a big one. We now have a number of partners there. GIS has been expanding in the service that we collaborate with. We've recently taken on some HR services for a couple of municipalities. So it does continue to expand. In any given year, there's a number of purchasing contracts where we will collaborate. Those tend to be not so much a formal agreement, but when there's an opportunity that our buying power is beneficial and we need to purchase similar goods or services, we can do that through economies of scale. And certainly we have some savings and if nothing else, at a minimum, we're saving time of only going out to market once when we're doing those tenders. So we continue to look at ways that we can work together. I think we have some really good relationships with our member municipalities in how we partner, and we've, you know, expanded that a little bit. IT, for example, we provide service to the two local police forces, being Port Hope and Coburg. So you know, we are continuing to be a bit creative, and those types of shared services really have set us up well for some of the other partnerships that we have, like recently joining on with the Ontario Health Team. And while it's not directly a shared service, it is that sense of community and collaboration that the county really strives to be a partner with all of these various organizations.
Glenn, do we have any idea of just how much the municipalities in the county benefit from these partnerships financially? Do you have a figure?
I don't have a total figure. I mean, that's something I can certainly provide for you. But the largest component of where we see savings is through providing surface treatment. There's a significant amount of savings by the county providing that service versus the lower tier member municipalities going up. But certainly, if you're looking at overall, it's something I could provide to you.
Okay. Jennifer, you mentioned the Ontario Health Team, and the report mentioned some very significant changes. And there's also a proposal to have COVID testing in the community. Is there any timeline on when that may take place?
Well, community paramedicine has already launched. So that program, we received the funding earlier this year. So the paramedics are in the process of rolling that out. And our chief is working closely with a number of our healthcare provider agencies around the county. To look at the different aspects, things like remote patient monitoring. We already have some patients in trial for that. I got an email just a couple of days ago with an example where that actually was working exactly as intended. The monitoring was taking place. The community paramedic saw a little bit of a blip in the stats, and they were able to go out and visit that individual and tweak what they were doing while they were at home without that turning into an emergency room visit. So that's an example of how the remote patient monitoring is intended to work, and we'll continue to ramp up those numbers over the next number of months. There's also the other aspects, things like COVID testing. The paramedics have already been out doing that testing. We've partnered with Northumberland, or with the Trent Hills Family Health Team, and they have spent many days out doing that testing. They've also done some remote testing and visiting to other specific sites. I know we did a visit to Alderville, and we've been out and about in the community a bit, and looking at wave two. That's certainly a consideration for how the resources of our community paramedics can be used, because they're best trained to do that. So there'll be a lot more coming. Things like other possibilities would be flu clinics or other outreach supports. And as we continue to ramp up that program, unfortunately with COVID, it did us, we put a lot more resources on the COVID testing than some of the other programs that we would like to see in the community paramedic program, but they will certainly come with time. COVID was top priority right at the moment. But it's good experience, and having those community paramedics out there, it's something that the majority of communities across the province already had in place. And we were very fortunate that we were able to acquire from the province significant funding that we'll be able to offer a full program out to the Northumberland County community. And when we think about our rural community members, that type of outreach is excellent, especially with an aging population. and how we can provide service either in their home or closer to their home is really what that helps to do and reduce those emergency visits by going out and doing that outreach.
Now, the Economic Recovery Task Force, in its recommendations, one of the key ones was the expansion of broadband service across the county. It's also highlighted in your annual report, especially with the COVID going on and more people working at home and young people learning at home, huge pressure on getting these services in place. Can you give people some assurance as to when this is going to finally land on people's doorstep?
We don't have a timeline. To state a date would not be wouldn't be appropriate because we're not there yet. We're continuing to we have a study underway right now that will be completed in the next month or so to help us better understand what's available across our community as far as infrastructure, as well as help to prioritize where the needs are greatest based on service level deficiencies. That will help shape future funding applications. Obviously, it's very, very expensive to actually create this. We've also supported the next phase of the EORN project. The Eastern Ontario Regional Network they did a project a few years ago for the backbone of the fiber. They now have a project currently underway for cell gap and capacity for mobile broadband. And we'll see, they've actually launched a proposal for a gig project. And is currently, that group is working to acquire that funding. And certainly the county is very supportive of that initiative. So we're both working to support EORN for the broader Eastern Ontario regional projects. As well as working on some local initiatives. And also we have a number of our private sector partners that are looking to expand, and we're of course supporting where we can to help them facilitate any expansion that they might be trying to do or acquire funding for. So we're working closely there as well.
Do you actually feel at the county level that the sense of urgency, especially in the face of the pandemic, the need for better and improved services in the rural areas especially?
Absolutely. We hear that almost every day, that there is the demand. We know that it certainly is critical for business recovery, as well as, you know, you mentioned students and also for pleasure. We have people moving to our area all the time that are accustomed to the service levels that the urban centers have, and they're looking for that in the more rural setting as well. To implement this level of infrastructure is a very complex process and a very expensive process. So it will take a bit of time to get that, but we're continuing to look at ways that we can see some expansion. And there are projects happening all the time with our providers. Unfortunately, they tend to be smaller projects and don't necessarily reach as many residents as we'd like to see. I think a lot of our private providers, as well as all of our levels of government, understand the priority that's on broadband. And the county is working to be partners with that and see how much we can push that forward. We certainly do understand the need.
Glenn, one of the things, a theme that's come up many times in our conversation this morning has been the expense of things. We certainly have a demand, but we need the money. Are we getting enough support from the upper tier levels of government, the provincial and federal government, to support the needs that we have and the urgency of meeting the needs that we have in the county?
I think recently the upper levels of government have been fairly supportive with some of the recent funding announcements that we have seen. Like related to our Elgin Park redevelopment, as well as related to COVID very recently. So I think partnering with the upper levels of government has been very positive. I think they recognize the various initiatives that the county is bringing forward, and they see them as very positive initiatives. So, I mean, it could always certainly be more when we look at various sources of financing. We are very dependent on upper levels of government. About 30% of our revenue is sourced from upper levels of government, so it is very significant. Any changes going forward to funding models from provincial ministries can really have a very significant impact on the county budget, particularly for those ongoing recurring type funding pockets that we are very dependent on for providing mandated services in many areas. So also though, recognizing the infrastructure deficit that the county has, you know, we have talked about some major projects, but those are you know, some examples. We know that we're not paving as many kilometers of roadway as we should every year to meet our service level standards that we set for ourselves. So it's always a challenge in looking at sources of financing and, you know, coming down to then a balanced budget at the end of the year. And again, looking at that 10-year model as well and ensuring that we're, you know, able to be consistent in what our property tax increases are as well. So it's really aligned more with what we would see from an inflationary perspective. But any changes to government funding models, particularly on those recurring funding pockets, certainly then does have can have significant impacts on the county's budget.
Now, Jennifer, we know that the Ontario government has been doing a municipal review. Is there any sense of a regional governance model coming to Northumberland?
We haven't heard anything. I think we all heard the rumors that were out there quite some time ago, well over a year ago, I guess. Once those studies that were being done at the provincial level were put to bed, we haven't had any conversations or communications on that from the province. The municipal reviews are really focused on looking at ways to make sure that we're operating as efficiently as we can and effectively using the resources that we have. That's really been their focus. They have not in any way indicated that they want a look at regionalization to be a component of those reports. So it's really about internal and effective, efficient operations that they're targeting right now.
I want to thank both of you for talking to me today. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome very much.
Thank you.
I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me. And I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. While we are busy self-isolating, it's important to remember the world has not stopped entirely. If you know of a good story or have an idea for a story, please let me know. You can email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com. and include as much detail as possible, especially contact information. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, you can also email me at that same address. Or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This. Or if you're on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.